It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you. That was an artist whose name is not familiar to me. Her name is Cicel. I think she must be Irish. And a beautiful rendition of Auld Lang Syne as all these beautiful pieces of scenery from around the globe are shown. And so here it is, 2019. Can you believe it? 2019. Doesn't that sound strange? You know, it's like the first check you write of the year. I always get it wrong. And so 2019, make a note of that as you're writing your checks today. And, you know, there were celebrations all across the globe, millions, according to the Daily Mail, in Paris, Berlin, Athens. Fireworks counted down to midnight above the North Korean capital, Pyongyang, on New Year's Eve. A record amount of pyrotechnics were used during a dazzling fireworks display in Sydney, Australia. Singapore, Hong Kong, Malaysia, and New Zealand also welcomed 2019 with a huge fireworks display. Revelers in New York, where it was a torrential downpour and there was a partial ban on umbrellas. So that was an interesting celebration. And then, of course, on the West Coast, 50,000 people filled Grant Park in Los Angeles for the last of the big New Year moments. It was the last, you know, on the globe. That's the latest time zone to celebrate it. And so there was just beautiful descriptions of the things that happened. And I hope that you had it just remembered. I think, isn't it nice? I think it's really nice that we have a point in time where we reflect on our lives. We stop. We sort of get off the merry-go-round and reflect as people in our personal lives. What happened this year? And who were we this year? What did we do and what did we not do? And how do we want to be better? And how do we hope and pray for things to change, circumstances in our lives? And then, of course, in our families and in our countries and in the world. And I think that's what, you know, that's really a great gift to us, that God gives us time. You know, God is timeless. He doesn't think in terms of time, but I do think that he lets humans do that. It helps us to understand better. If we didn't have the boundaries of time, it would be much harder to comprehend the life as we are experiencing it. So I think it's a great gift. And also, I have to say, for me, it was a great gift to be away. Just away in many ways, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. It was refreshing, and I hope that you had that same kind of refreshing, just relaxing the news media and all the mobs, the mental mobs, if they're not literal mobs, of the left were not able to spoil what really sort of, I think, rushed in to fill the gaps, and that was natural life. You know, you saw people just enjoying each other and just interactions and commerce and driving, touring, seeing all kinds of things, excuse me, without the left, you know, causing all that angst, stirring up, really, it's the dark ickiness, the disturbance that we find intruding on our personal lives and also on our lives as a nation. And so how nice to have a break from all that. Of course, this is January 2nd, and so things are going to change today. But I do think it's good to remember that if we were not stirred up into a frenzy all the time by other factors and sources who intentionally want to keep us stirred up, life is still good, isn't it? Isn't life still good? I have to speak personally. Thank you, by the way, as my listeners, for being patient with my absence. I hope you enjoyed our best of shows. We tried to pick out some we thought that you would really enjoy hearing again. And also, you needed a break from the news, too, right? So you could still catch it. I did. I was in Scotland, and I tried to catch as much as I could, but not all the time like I do. And so I caught up with what was happening, and there wasn't a lot happening. So, and I'm going to talk about some of that in a minute, but I just want to reflect a minute. My husband and I were in St. Andrews, Scotland, visiting my son, his wife, and our four grandchildren. And so we flew Aer Lingus. Aer Lingus is an Irish airline, so we flew Aer Lingus and then to Dublin and had quite a long layover there. That was interesting. We could not get out into Dublin. I've never been to Ireland. But we, as we got on the propeller plane, which had a very hard time getting off the air, off the ground. That was interesting. They started the propellers like three different times, and I, as they finally took off, they delayed so many times, I was thinking, you know, this does not inspire confidence, you know, as we take off in this propeller plane. But we did, and it did make it into the air, and I was very grateful. But we saw the green of Ireland. Oh, my goodness. When they say it's green, they're not kidding. It was just row after row of what appeared to be plots of land, you know, separated by hedges, green hedges, and it was just beautiful. I look forward to actually seeing it. We flew from there to Edinburgh, Scotland, where my son picked us up, and we went directly. Now, we've been traveling probably 20 hours by then. We went directly to the Christmas market in downtown Edinburgh. Edinburgh, of course, is such an old city, and the castle sits up on the hill, and it's just a fascinating place. The Christmas market is very much in the vein of the German markets, where all kinds of goods and services, goods are sold, all kinds of food, everything you could want, but it's all beautiful stuff. It's not kitschy. That's a German term for junky. It's nice. It's beautiful stuff, well-crafted. And people were so polite. There were tons of people there, but the spirit was so festive. And the thing that I noticed about it that I absolutely loved, I almost wanted to fall on my knees in public and thank God publicly, because as silly as this sounds, they were playing Christmas music, and I mean Christmas music, Away in the Manger and Joy to the World, you know, classic hymns, classic Christmas carols. And it just didn't seem to be a problem. It didn't seem to be spoiling anyone's fun or creating division. It was Christmas, the Christmas market. The story of Christ was not hidden, and I was very grateful in that very secular country of Scotland that that is still allowed, because we don't see that much. If you go to the stores, what are you hearing? You know, Santa baby? I mean, normally tolerant me of lots of kinds of music, just particularly got repelled this year by all the junky Christmas songs, because my heart missed the essence of the gospel. I just missed it so much. And so in the Christmas market, we had a great time. And my son particularly wanted me to go to the Christmas market because they have this Wurst stand, you know, the German Wurst, Knackwurst, but it's lots of different kinds of Wursts. And my favorite, which I didn't know was there, was one I used to be able to get in Berlin, Germany when I lived there years ago. It's called Currywurst. We used to order Currywurst mit Pommes frites. It's a curry, was currywurst and french fries. It's a brat with a curry sauce, and it is just fabulous, and it tasted just like the ones I used to get in Berlin years ago when I was very young. So that was such an incredible treat. So that was our first night. St. Andrews, Scotland, as I have described to you before, remember that the university itself was founded in 1413, the town before that. So the university where my son is a student was founded in the year 1413. Let that soak in just a little bit. And then you'll understand how old everything is and how absolutely beautiful the village of St. Andrews is. Cobblestones, the St. Andrews Cathedral, where my son, his office window looks out on the cathedral, which is burned. It's a ruin, and it was partially burned. And that happened because during the Scottish Reformation, John Knox, the Scottish reformer, was downtown preaching at another church, and he started speaking out against the idols of the Catholic Church. And the congregation ended up leaving the church. They were so fired up, they left the church and mobbed the cathedral and tore down all the statues. And that was just a big moment in the Scottish Reformation. So that's that little village where my son lives, that's where all that took place. And I mentioned before, there are two people that were martyred, burned to death at the stake in St. Andrews, and both of their names are in the various, and it's on the sidewalk, there's a place where they actually were burned to death with their names and the dates. So it's quite a place. We went to Christmas Eve service at an old chapel, probably dating back to 1413, called St. Leonard's. And the chaplain of, university chaplain of St. Andrews is Reverend Donald McEwen. He's about 6'7", and he is such an imposing presence. And when he was greeting people as they're coming into the church, we went an hour early just to watch. All of the townspeople, a lot of them, there were two different services, come to this service. And he's going, "Oh, Mr. McGregor, it's so great to see you. Happy Christmas," you know, and you're listening to all these people interact. They're all, you know, they've known each other for years, and they all filed in. We filed in with them. And you could imagine, you know, how a cathedral looks. The old, this is, again, a very old one, so it's small. It's like long and narrow. And on each side are the pews, if you would. And they were in risers, like a three elevated. So you face the congregation. The procession happens in front of you, but you all are facing each other in these two different sides. And then as you look, and we were sitting to the right of the pastor, so as we look to our left, he's preaching and leading music there. So there's, and then in the balcony, there's a electric or a pipe organ. So he's sitting up high, and it was a carol sing. We did nothing but read scripture by candlelight and sing carols. We sang wonderful carols, and we sang every verse. So we're singing to each other in that beautiful resonant cathedral. "Oh, come all ye faithful," we sang. "God rest ye merry gentlemen," you know, good Scottish roll. We sang Silent Night in German, Stille Nacht, which was wonderful for me. I loved it. Away in the Manger. I mean, just to give you an idea, it was wonderful. And I wish you could have all been there with me. Oh, Christmas dinner, my son fixed, of all things. My son loves to cook. So he had never done this before, but he decided, and he did, cook Christmas goose and Yorkshire pudding, among other famous British things that he'd never fixed before, and it was all delicious. Have you ever seen a Christmas goose? I was wondering how you'd handle the pan with that long neck, but we managed to do it, and it was just fun. It was very, very good, and it was just sweet. And just on a personal level, my son is writing. He's been entering contests and doing very well with his writing. He's already written, I think, 4 books. And yes, I'm proud of him. I'm just telling you. But you know what I'm proudest of? I'm proudest of the fact that he loves God and that he is called to write and that he is very insightful and he's biblically sound. He could be very different in a situation like that. There are a lot of secular theologians there. Maybe by that I mean I'm not sure they really know Jesus personally. A lot of, he's in a very different atmosphere. It's very challenging. Scotland is, again, a very secular country, and he's holding steadfast. And our daughter-in-law, Liesl, is homeschooling. She has 4 children now, so she's homeschooling 3 of them. So that's my personal report. I don't usually do that, but I thought you wouldn't mind if I shared that with you. And my mother's heart is just filled. So grateful for my children and my grandchildren and time with my family. So now to the business at hand, and there's a lot of it. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Every day in preborn centers across the country, young women in crisis find refuge. Here's Roxy, nurse director for preborn at the Crisis Pregnancy Center in Southern California.
A lot of them come to us and they feel rejected, they feel alone, they're in a crisis situation, they don't know what to do, they don't know where to start. We believe that sharing the compassionate love of Jesus Christ is what really makes what we do work.
Through love and compassion, young women facing tough situations get to meet Jesus Christ and their unborn baby on ultrasound.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies' lives that were spared. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims who lose everything.
It's truly a blessing. I really don't have the words to express.
And yet, they see a glimmer of hope when a volunteer shows up.
Building the home, that's the second reason we're here. The number one reason is to share the gospel and give them hope.
It's everything that's right in America. I mean, it really represents the best that we have to offer.
That's one of the main reasons for doing it, is being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus and coming out and working with so many wonderful volunteers.
I just feel like it's important in this day and age to teach a child how to serve.
Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved. Submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well.
I love coming in the job room because you can see these pieces of paper, they aren't just a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a family that's hurting, and it's a gospel opportunity.
You know, I just thank God, you know, for this moment. I mean, I'll be back in my home, and I know it's going to be awesome.
Come love others with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
MSNBC host Rachel Maddow took a cheap shot at Liberty University the other day.
We've got a new Justice Department spokesperson who's from Liberty University. And Liberty University is founded by a televangelist so that your Christian child wouldn't be corrupted by actual higher education. You know, and now that's the spokesperson for the Justice Department.
In reality, Liberty University is a school that thrives on debate and free speech. The university has introduced students to a diverse group of speakers, from Jimmy Carter and Bernie Sanders to President Trump and even yours truly. Compare that to many government-funded universities where conservatives are treated like enemy invaders. It's true, Liberty University is firmly rooted in Judeo-Christian philosophy, the same philosophy that is the foundation for our nation. I'd say we're better off with a Christian university that affirms the teachings of Jesus Christ than a government-funded university that affirms the teachings of Karl Marx. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Any resolutions from you, Mr. President, in this new year or any predictions in the new year or both?
Well, I think we're going to have a great form of wealth. We've created a lot of wealth for our country, and that's very important because that means jobs, it means prosperity.
Do you have any resolutions for 2019, sir? Any resolutions?
Just success and prosperity and health for our country. That's all I want.
That was Pete Hegseth with President Donald Trump, I think, on New Year's Eve. Sandy Rios back with you. Yeah, you know, the president stayed behind, and I'm going to get into the border shutdown. I'm going to get into that. You know I am. But let me just say that the president stayed behind in the White House by himself on Christmas through New Year's Eve, which I think is pretty amazing. Of course, everything he does is mocked. I think he was, based on the way he generally responds to things, I think he felt guilty that he shouldn't go to Mar-a-Lago to celebrate the New Year's. You know, he would have been criticized if he'd done that because of the shutdown, because government workers, 25% of them, well, technically they will all get paid. Let me make that clear. They'll all be paid. They always are. But 25% of the government is not, you know, reporting for work. Like, that's some tragedy. Actually, you know, the thing about a shutdown, I'm getting off the subject here, but the thing about a shutdown that's good is that you really non-essential workers are furloughed. Well, okay, non-essential workers are furloughed. So maybe non-essential workers, we should, many people argue that we should have a shutdown and let all essential workers just go. Let them go. Let's pare down the size of government. That's probably a good thing. But I did digress, so I'm going to come back. The president stayed, you know, trying to get Congress to come back. They didn't. Senate, I think, came back and met for 3 minutes on Monday. And I'm going to get to that in a second, too. But I want to talk about the year of 2018 and the year 2019 just for a second. The president tweeted on January 1st, Happy New Year to everyone, including the haters and the fake news media. 2019 will be a fantastic year for those not suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. Just calm down and enjoy the ride. Great things are happening for our country. And, of course, he's right about that. And I want to talk to you about some of those. But meanwhile, Melania was in Mar-a-Lago for New Year's Eve by herself. I don't know if this is Instagram. I think it's Instagram or Twitter. I'm not sure. A picture, a beautiful picture of herself, a selfie. Of course, some people chose to criticize that. Of course they did. And when she went to Iraq with the president and a surprise visit over the holidays, 30 hours she spent with her husband over the holidays, it sounds like. I mean, I don't know how long she was in the White House, but that's not easy. Can you imagine that? I just described to you my wonderful time with my family. Well, they were not together. I think that's sad because I think the president probably needed that time away, but he didn't take it. So Melania wore to Iraq this Timberlake jacket and boots. And, of course, the media could do nothing but snark about that, her ridiculous outfit. What's she supposed to wear to Iraq? I mean, what is she supposed to wear? Meanwhile, when I was in Scotland, even in Scotland, I saw Good Housekeeping, the cover of Good Housekeeping with Michelle Obama, who, of course, is the fashion icon for the press and all people on the left. In fact, there was an exchange between Brooke Baldwin and Don Lemon on New Year's Eve night that kind of gives you an idea of the adoration of Mrs. Obama. Let's listen.
I read Michelle Obama's book last week over holiday. By the way, it's amazing. And her whole notion of like becoming and inviting people in on your journey, you know, it's just, I so respect her and reading her stories of coming from the south side of Chicago and becoming who she is and still ever becoming. It's just a note for all of us.
Yeah.
Despite all of it.
And class.
Class.
We miss that class.
Yes,
you can't buy class, no matter how much money you have.
But authenticity. She seems like the real deal. I'm talking like her, like I know Mrs. Obama, but
I do know her, by the way. So, listen.
I'm sorry.
I do. I know the Obamas. I was in Chicago when he was my state senator in Chicago.
So, Mrs. Obama, meanwhile, wore some gold lamé boots that went, I think, over her knees. It's in some interview that she did. And the papers and the news and the fashion magazines went crazy. Meanwhile, Melania Trump wears Timberlake boots to Iraq, and somehow that's just horrible. You see how this goes. You know, when I think of Mrs. Obama, I will never forget, this is what always strikes me. Besides the fact that I was in Chicago when she was allegedly so successful, I remember when her husband was elected to Senate, suddenly her salary for whatever job she was doing, I believe it was at the University of, it's one of the hospitals, I'm sorry, it might have been University of Chicago, her salary went up like $300,000 just because her husband was elected to the Senate. So this is how this goes. And I also remember Mrs. Obama with her famous racist remarks, her famous racist writings for the time she got her PhD at Princeton, most of which have been tucked away so that we don't see them. And then I remember a video, and you might also, not long after 9/11, the president, well, it was a 9/11 remembrance. It was a long time after 9/11, where the president, as in Obama, and his wife were standing on a stage while this display of the flags and the Star Spangled Banner, whatever it was, and Mrs. Obama turns toward her husband and she says, it ain't nothing but a blank flag. That's what I remember when I think of class and Mrs. Obama. So I'm sorry. I'm just not going to let that pass. They made her into something beautiful. I absolutely agree. They morphed her appearance and made her look beautiful. Her fashion sense improved as First Lady, but she was packaged. It wasn't that way before. So that's my personal opinion, and I think it's disgraceful what they're doing to Melania. Both women can be beautiful. Michelle looks great now. And I won't take that from her. But so does Melania, for heaven's sake. And they'd love to take that from her. All right, talking about President Trump and his record, you know, he just finished his second year as president. The Daily Caller did a piece on President Trump's biggest wins and losses of 2018. And it would, I just thought it would be interesting for me to just touch on these a little bit. They put as number one his win in the Senate. That's something that we don't talk about a lot. But honestly, what happened in the Senate, in spite of what the left tried to do in the elections, and they did take some of those seats, I'm sure of it. He has a margin now of 52 to 47 in the Senate. Plus, he lost some really horrible senators, like, shall I say, Senator Flake and Senator Corker, who opposed him at every turn. He has a set of senators who will be, except for Mitt Romney, who is going to be a thorn in his side and a thorn in mine, too, because I don't like him. Just to make that clear, I had personal interactions with him when he was running for president way back, while some of you still thought he was a nice person, and I saw that he was not a nice person. So he's going to be in the Senate, and we'll just see, won't we? But he's not going to be one of Trump's supporters, trust me. The other big win that the Daily Caller mentions is the appointment of Brett Kavanaugh. And, of course, this is just for last year now. That's why we're limiting it. And other federal judges. He has done a lot. 85 judges have been confirmed to the federal bench just in 2018 alone. And that's a very good thing. North Korea and Iran. I don't know, some of you, we have short memories, may not remember how tense things were with North Korea. Anybody remember? How we were concerned. They were experimenting with rockets almost weekly, and they were getting closer and closer to being able to hit Hawaii and the West Coast. And really, we were in danger, even though you might not have felt it because you couldn't see it. Same thing with Iran. Iran has been kicked in the seat by this president and really been very quiet. You notice they have not been, you know, pounding the table and threatening like they were because they have been hurt by the sanctions. Their economy's been hurt. I guess all that money that Barack Obama made sure and gave them in cash didn't go very far. So they've been hurt, and so we've been placed in a position of power in terms of Iran, and there would be superiority in the Middle East, and that's something to be grateful for. They were the biggest terrorist organization in the Middle East, and so that's a good thing. According to the Daily Caller, I'll read their words here, Trump realized his decades-old dream of imposing tariffs on rival nations in 2018, particularly ramping up a trade war with the Chinese government. China's economy is kind of in trouble right now, where it was booming, thanks to us. We handed them our technology. We let our companies, our global trade, you know, go to China. I have a friend who worked for IBM who talked to me about how they made her go over and share things with Chinese executives that she at the time thought, why are we telling them this? And then, of course, we've allowed Chinese students to come into our universities, and we've had more than one case of espionage and many, many more that we'll never know about. They have stolen our secrets. We've handed them a lot of them. That started under the Clinton administration. Just amazing. We have just drained our own resources to enrich China, and now that has waned a bit under President Trump, and I think that's a good thing. The Daily Caller says tariffs were said by many experts to be a reckless and ineffective maneuver that would tank the U.S. economy. But incredible progress has remained largely steady. And then the American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, has been renamed because the president promised he would rewrite it. He did. And so it increases protections for U.S. workers and increases mandates for products that must be built in the United States. And the losses, of course, the House is a huge loss. No question about it. That's a story that we'll long be talking about. Nancy Pelosi will probably take the gavel on Thursday morning. The Republicans lost nearly 40 seats, and some of them we know were stolen. We know that. One, Mark Harris in North Carolina, is still not decided. But they did take the House, and Nancy Pelosi is preventing. Oh, she's not the only one. I'm going to get into that in just a second. But the immigration deal. Nancy Pelosi is sworn to oppose any money for a wall for President Trump. But you know that. So this is going to get very interesting. So that's kind of the Daily Caller's rundown of the good and bad things. One other good thing that you probably, maybe some of you in business realize this, others of you just should know about it, that President Trump has made good and then some on his pledge to slash costly federal regulations. What we had under Barack Obama and other presidencies was a massive amount of regulations, which are treated like laws, some of the environmental, punishing farmers, landowners, water usage, putting people in prison for what they called crimes, but it was breaking of these regulations. It's been a nightmare for people out in the West and other people who's probably listening to me and say, yes, I know about that. The president has made good on doing away with many of these regulations. And Trump's index, whatever 2018 index was 12, and Obama's index, however they measure it, was 29. Because he hurried. Remember at the end of his tenure, he hurried to write as many regulations as he could to stop President Trump from enacting his policies. It's just been amazing. Other things that happened in 2018, Texas and Florida saw big population gains, while New York and Illinois saw very big losses. What's the common denominator there? You've got governments that are run by, in most cases, pretty really good Republicans who are fiscally responsive and care about their people. And so their state governments have been controlled by good Republicans in Texas and Florida. And what's the common denominator with New York and Illinois? They've lost their governance. They've lost their collective minds, much like California. It's just amazing what's happened, and people are seeing the effects of bad governance on their daily lives. You know, people that I know in Chicago have had to leave their homes because they can't afford the outrageous taxes. The burden, the tax burden, and the regulations are getting untenable. So that's what's happened. And then there's a Life site is reporting, Life News, is reporting that 42 million people were aborted in the year 2018. 42 people worldwide were aborted in 2018. That is, it exceeds deaths related to cancer, HIV, AIDS, traffic accidents, and suicide, all from abortions worldwide. And then this is kind of a sad way to end it. I'm going to just say this. This is written by Dennis Prager in WorldNet Daily. He has his title is The Left Will Make 2019 a Dark Year. The goal of the left is to weaken, disable, and impeach the president. It's the heart of its mission to undo the 2016 presidential election. If the Republicans had done anything comparable during the Obama administration, the Democrats and the media would not only have charged Republicans with racism, as they labeled all criticism of Barack Obama, they would have howled fascism. He moves down and says, from the French Revolution to this day, the two great aims of the left have been promising utopia to the malcontented and accumulating as much power as possible. All moral values are subservient to these goals. After all, what could be more important than social justice, equality, women's liberation from sexist oppression of the patriarchy, combating white privilege and fighting the rape culture that pervades campuses, saving life on planet Earth from the existential threat to resistance to the authoritarian, fascist, white supremacist, racist Trump administration, supplanting national identities and institutions with a world citizen identity and international institutions, and undoing the most fundamental built-in identity of the human race, that of male and female, in the name of transgender rights. Compared with almost any country, America is freer, gives its people more opportunities to economically advance, is less racist, xenophobic, and anti-Semitic, has a friendlier population, has less corruption, has far more medical innovation. Yet this coming year, the left, the Democratic Party, and the media will continue purveying the lie that the Trump administration is fascist, racist, and authoritarian and poses a mortal threat to American democracy. Thanks to Democratic control of the House of Representatives, the left will use the levers of government to keep the American people in a constant state of agitation. That's the left's agenda for 2019. And he says, in closing, I hope I'm wrong. And Dennis Prager, we'll put that article on our Facebook page. You know, I feel optimistic. I don't know why. Emotions can't be trusted. I know I'm refreshed. But I just feel I feel like we've had a good rest now. And maybe the haranguing of the left is just getting so very old, isn't it? Isn't anybody sick of this the way most of us are? We'll just see how this plays out. Maybe there'll be some twists and turns that God will bring in that we cannot see. Sandy Rios in the morning, back with you in just a second.
And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Acts 17:26 conveys to us the reality that we were born and placed in the 21st century by God's specific design. He determined before time where we would live and when we would live there. If you're in Minnesota, Mississippi, or Maine, God put you there on purpose. He's not surprised by the darkness we see around us, nor is he caught off guard by it. In fact, he specifically prepared for it by making sure you're alive right now. God can do whatever he wants, but he's chosen to use you and me as ambassadors of his kingdom. We are his torches to light up the darkness.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. If a single issue delineates the chasm between the worldview of our two major political parties, socialism may be it. Socialism is a rabidly non-conservative view of public policy. It depends on an ever bigger and more powerful government, which involuntarily transfers wealth from those who have to those who don't. Capitalism prefers a smaller government, which transfers responsibility from government to the individual citizen. It depends upon self-reliance rather than welfare dependency. Capitalists believe in the transfer of wealth just like socialists do, only they believe in individuals giving generously and willingly out of their own resources. It's no surprise that 57% of Democrats view socialism positively, while just 16% of Republicans do. Never forget, the bigger the government, the smaller the citizen.
Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
We are not allowed to have a U-Haul that comes to heaven with us.
Anna Marie Travers has an AFA Foundation charitable gift annuity.
The Lord has given us things that we can acquire, but you know, everything will stay here, and I'm so thankful for the American Family Annuity Fund, where we can give some to something that we so highly value.
Through the AFA Foundation, a charitable gift annuity provides a monthly income as well as a legacy of support for the American Family Association.
I cannot recommend a better person than they have at AFA to help you with getting your annuity fund. It was so easy.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Now that we've finished running the clock out on 2018, it's time to begin a new countdown. No, I'm not talking about the 2020 election TikTok, although Senator Elizabeth Warren and countless other Democratic presidential candidates earnestly want us to do so. Rather, experts say we face the prospect that in slightly less than 2 months, America will have lost, perhaps permanently, the ability to compete for, let alone dominate, the global marketplace for so-called 5G wireless technologies. If the United States doesn't engage immediately, these fifth-generation arbiters of the future of mobile communications, the Internet of Things, personal privacy, the state-of-the-art surveillance techniques, cyber warfare, and military superiority will be controlled instead by communist China. And such control will imperil this country's security and sovereignty and what remains of the free worlds. It's time to act while we still can. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The situation at the border is unprecedented. In my 30 years of working for the Border Patrol, I've never witnessed the situation that we're faced with today. We are being overwhelmed with migrants, principally family units and children, and then people that are from countries other than Mexico. In the first time in the Border Patrol's history, the majority of our arrests are what we call other than Mexican nationals, people from China, Bangladesh, India, and then, of course, Central America. But what we need along the border is a border enforcement system. There is no singular solution. What we need is a combination of factors, a border infrastructure, roads that provide access to the border, technology, ground sensors, night vision cameras, drones, and then, of course, wall or fencing to secure the border. It is a comprehensive system. It's complex, it's multifaceted. And what we need is an entire border enforcement system. And again, after 30 years of working in border enforcement, I can attest to the fact that walls, border fences do work. I was here in San Diego back in the late 80s and early 90s. We began putting up fencing in the mid-1990s, and that had a dramatic impact on the flow of illegal migration. I was in Yuma, Arizona in 2004 when we began to put up fencing. The same thing unfolded there. As soon as we put in infrastructure and fencing, you add technology and agents, it has a dramatic impact on that flow of illicit migrants, illicit narcotics, and it brings control to the border. The wall doesn't see color. It doesn't see nationality. It's designed as a border security structure. It's designed to provide a delineation of the border. It provides an opportunity for agents to respond to any sort of traffic at the border, whether it be an illegal migrant, whether it be narcotic traffickers, whatever that threat may be, it provides an opportunity for us to respond.
Wow, can you just hear the kind of integrity that is present in some of these people guarding our borders? That in spite of the support or lack of it they get from Congress, that they still remain and they think clearly and they see clearly and they articulate clearly. That was Deputy Chief of Border Patrol Roy Villarreal, which obviously he has a Hispanic name. He must be a racist then, right? In San Diego, speaking on Vox News, and he's describing what's happening at the border, which I don't know if there have been many reports during the vacation on that. I wasn't here to watch. But as I understand it, things are really heating up. In fact, a report yesterday said that authorities used tear gas to stop migrants. That's the headline, but let me get into this a little bit with you. U.S. authorities fired tear gas at migrants from the Central American caravan that has gathered there. Authorities fired the gas into Mexico to keep roughly 150 migrants from breaching the border fence in Tijuana. An Associated Press photographer witnessed at least three volleys of gas launched onto the Mexican side of the border. But now listen more, because there's a lot more to this story. U.S. Customs and Border Patrol Protection said in a statement that the gas was aimed at rock throwers on the Mexican side who prevented agents from helping children being passed over the concertina wire. The agency said 25 migrants were detained. Katie Waldman, Homeland Security spokesperson, said, "Once again, we have had a violent mob of migrants attempt to enter the United States illegally by attacking our agents with projectiles. As has happened before, in this and previous administrations, our personnel use the minimum force necessary to defend themselves, defend our border, and restore order. The agents involved should be applauded for handling the situation with no reported injuries to the attackers." And continues by saying this: "Initial reporting indicates that once the attempted illegal entry was thwarted by agents, the mob began pushing women and minors to the front, forcing minors to climb dangerous concertina wire, and encouraged, conveniently, invited media to begin filming their illegal acts." Do you see how this happens? So they're still up to their shenanigans, and the way they want to report this is that those desperate illegal immigrants were being tear-gassed by these no-good, horrible border agents. You know, there's another report that just came out this morning. This is from, I didn't even have a chance to really read the article, because it came in my inbox as I was speaking to you. But it's the title is "The Number of Sick Kids Soars at Border, Tuberculosis, Flu, Infections, Land Migrants, and Hospitals." And this is a tweet by Britt Hume. The article I just referenced from the Washington Times, which we will put on our Facebook page, by the way, it says 50 crossers a day need urgent medical care. Should add perspective amid the outrage over the sad deaths of those two migrant children. And you know what that reminds me of? You probably heard this over the holidays, and I wasn't prepared to talk about this, so I don't remember her name. But there was a reporter, writer with The Federalist, young girl, she's like 23, 24, who died of swine flu. Like, she was on the air on the night before doing a show for One America Network, I think it was. And the next day, she died. She is from San Diego, and people are wondering, how did she catch this, and how did a healthy girl die so in such short order? And where are these diseases coming from? So that's not all. I'm going to give you a few other stories here. You know that there was, probably you know if you don't, a California law enforcement officer, Corporal Ron Singh, died at the hands, well, let me read this differently. This is from Conservative HQ, and this is written by George Rasley. This past Saturday, a courageous California law enforcement officer, Corporal Ron Singh, died at the hands of California Governor Jerry Brown, Representative Nancy Pelosi, and California Attorney General Xavier Becerra, and Senators Dianne Feinstein and Kamala Harris. Oh, they will tell you that it was not them, but an illegal alien named Gustavo Arriaga who pulled the trigger, and those who were taken into custody for aiding and abetting, and they list the names of all those. The suspect's brother, 25-year-old Adrian Virgen, and a co-worker, 32-year-old Eric Razzo Quiros, were arrested on accessory after the fact for attempting to protect Arriaga. Both of them were also in the country illegally. Stanislaus County Sheriff Adam Christensen said that Arriaga was a member of the Serrinos gang and had been arrested twice before on charges of driving under the influence of alcohol. Bottom line, without me reading all of this, California became a sanctuary state. Jerry Brown said something like this. He said, if we can put a man on the moon, we can put a man from Mexico to California in 20 minutes. That was Jerry Brown talking about welcoming illegal immigrants. He made it a sanctuary state by signing the Trust Act and giving driver's licenses to illegal immigrants. He expanded financial aid to illegal immigrants by signing the California Dream Act. And so this is what's happening in California. So that police officer is now dead. Totally unnecessary. This guy should have been deported and wasn't, thanks to Jerry Brown and all the politicians out in California. I think George is right. I don't think that's an exaggeration. They must be held accountable. You wonder, maybe someone should sue them personally for their not taking their duties seriously. I have a lot to tell you, so I want to get on with it. This is lots of different outlets were writing about what the president was doing. I want to read one of these headlines. Trump digs in, lashes out amid shutdown standoff. It's almost, I was going to play you Kevin Cork's report from Fox. I don't think I'm going to have time to do that, but it's always mocking. Yeah, the president holed up in the White House, you know, having a Twitter fit about this wall and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Everything is stated that way when you and I both know that securing our border is absolutely essential. What reasonable American wants disease and crime and drugs exported without restraint on the southern border? What real American feels that way? I played before the break, I played for you a long statement by Chuck Schumer, one by Nancy Pelosi as well, several years ago, talking about the need for border security. Barack Obama too. But now, no, not so much, because President Trump, Donald Trump, the evil, wicked president, wants that wall, wants to secure the United States of America from foreign enemies. And you heard that the Border Patrol agent in that first clip that I played talking about it's not even hardly Mexicans anymore. It's people from all over the world. We've never seen anything like this. The president wants to secure the border, but they will be, you know what, if they'll let him do that. And so they mock him. He tweeted on Christmas Day, I spent Christmas in the White House. I spent New Year's now in the White House. A lot of people are looking to get their paycheck, so I'm ready to go whenever they want. We are not giving up. We have to have border security, and the wall is a big part of border security, the biggest part. So both the House and Senate gaveled in for a brief pro forma session on Monday, but conducted no business. So the government has been shut down, I think, 11 days now. The president's still in Washington, but not Congress. In fact, I want to read to you an article written by Rachel Bovard, who it's excellent, and I'll read as much as I can, as quickly as I can. Her title is "The Senate Owns This Shutdown." On Thursday, the Senate made a part of the outcome obvious. After retreating for the Christmas holiday, the Senate returned to work for all of 3 minutes. The Senate came into session on Thursday afternoon and then gaveled out again 3 minutes later, January 2nd. The upper chamber is determined, it seems, to avoid a vote on the House bill to fund the government, a bill that also provides $5 billion for President Trump's border wall. So the House passed a bill, and it did include $5 billion for border funding and some for disaster relief. They passed it to the Senate, and the Senate just fumbled it. There's a lot to say about that, but they didn't ever even take a vote on it. So they gaveled out. And then Rachel goes on to say, the last 2 years perhaps have made this outcome obvious. This is the same Senate that failed to repeal Obamacare, fought against holding votes to defund Planned Parenthood, and repeatedly shut down opportunities to offer even mainstream Republican policy priorities. With friends like these, who needs Democrats? Then she goes on, there's a lot of detail here. She says the conflict over border wall funding represents the clash that has been in the making for the last 2 years. Since President Trump's election, there has been no visceral and invisible tug of war between the two poles. There has been a visceral and visible tug of war between the two poles of the Republican Party. The establishment, D.C.-based big government Republican Party of George W. Bush, and the more populist grassroots constituency, the country class, that prefers more limited government, feels passionately about pro-life issues and strong borders, and actively opposes Obamacare. And then she goes on to spell out what's happened here, and I'm not going to be able to read all that, but we'll put that on our Facebook page. The Senate owns this shutdown. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi is threatening to pass legislation after she gets the gavel tomorrow morning that would reopen the federal government without, it would fund the federal government without giving the president money for the wall. And she's concocted a plan, and she says she's going to be able to do it, but honestly, you're going to hear about this in the next several hours, but I just cut to the chase to say, unless the Senate signs off on that, they can't do that. They just can't do that. So that's just a lot of chatter. The president is asking Nancy to come in and let's make a deal. Let's talk about this. She's saying she won't. No money for the wall. Nothing. And the president did something funny. I have to mention this. The president pointed to a 10-foot security wall around the Obama's mansion compound and said, President and Mrs. Obama built as a 10-foot wall around their D.C. mansion compound. I agree. Totally necessary for their safety and security. The U.S. needs the same thing. Slightly larger version. That's just common sense. Paul Ryan has the same thing, which brings me to this next story. There is some good stuff happening, and I want to tell you about it. While we were vacationing, some of us, Senator Tom Cotton successfully blocked House Speaker Paul Ryan from outsourcing 5,000 white-collar jobs to Irish graduates each year. Cotton blocked the outsourcing bill by putting a last-minute legislative hold on the proposal, ensuring it could get through the Senate, ensuring it could get through the Senate's lame-duck session. The move also denied a political victory to Democrat Chuck Schumer, who had pushed for the outsourcing bill. Schumer and other Democrats were expected to claim that the GOP approval of the Irish giveaway reveals racist motives for apparent GOP opposition to much larger giveaways to people from Africa, South America, India, or China. Now, the story on this is, I don't have time to spell this out, but I have to do it quickly. This has been happening for at least a decade or more, two decades probably, where foreign nationals are brought in, professionals legally brought in to take the jobs of American workers. Do you remember at Disney, they fired a ton of Disney technical workers and made them, force them, if they wanted to have any severance pay, to train their foreign national counterparts who came in to work for much, much less money. This is all about making, you know, the bottom line for big companies bigger. And Tom Cotton has, and Paul Ryan was all about doing that. Tom Cotton blocked it over the vacation. I want to also say that those of you that stopped for a minute, and I know many of you did, to call the president and urge him not to back down on this wall, because he almost did. I think he was so without heart that he almost backed down. You are to be congratulated. I can tell you that staffers on Capitol Hill know that it was you and the people rising up once again that persuaded the president to hold the line, to not be discouraged, and to not give up. So it was once again an effort of the people that caused him to find his footing. The GoFundMe wall that was started by this veteran has $18 million now by American citizens. We'll put the site up on our Facebook page again so you can donate if you like. Oh, there's so much more to say, but I'll be back tomorrow to say it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.